This is 69 the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 12 years, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and into what stuff means, and help listeners understand why they should maybe give a crap. You can listen to episodes online, get them off iTunes or Google Play, or subscribe using a podcast app. Whatever way you choose, they're free and there's a new one weekly. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported from the start by Jeremy Gavin and his great team at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. If you deal with companies over in Europe, you've probably been carpet bombed lately by email requests to update your subscription settings for things like product announcements. That all owes to something called GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation, that goes into effect in the European Union at the end of this week. You can count me in as someone who barely has the acronyms correct, never mind a grip on what it actually means. The short story is that it's a law on data protection and privacy for all individuals within the EU, and it also addresses the export of personal data outside the EU. So, if you're in digital signage or digital out-of-home in particular, you should care about this. GDPR is a problem for a lot of digital media companies, but it's an opportunity for those that use anonymous data, like a lot of place-based media operators. Sheldon Silverman, the CEO of Chicago-based SmartBomb Media Group, has his head around all this. So he asked if we could do a podcast to fill the rest of us in. Get yourself a pen and paper. This is worth taking notes on. So, Sheldon, thank you for doing this. I don't know shit about this whole thing. It's enough to get it straight, whether it's GDPR or GDPR. So when we were chatting last week at the Digital Signage Federation board meeting, you seemed to have your head around it. And I asked you, could we do a podcast? Because I don't get it. And I think a lot of people in our industry don't get what the General Data Protection Regulation is all about and why we should give a crap.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we should all definitely give a crap, number one, because it has serious implications for the industry, but also consumers should care about it as well, because it shifts some of the balance of power that arose with the collection of data and data interaction and social media and digital tracking. And so it's very important both from a consumer standpoint and from a business standpoint.
Okay. So it's shifting the power from the social media platforms?
Yeah, well, actually shifting the power that basically mandated who controlled data, whether it was the consumer that controlled the data or the social media platforms and digital platforms and interactive platforms. And I think that that's really the major shift that we're talking about, because at the end of the day, data is really, you know, the currency of the future out there. And we already know the value of data, and companies have been exploiting the value of that data, be it companies that just supply the data and then allow marketers or brands to target more effectively, or companies that are modeling new services and utilize the tracking of data for it. And the consumer isn't really compensated in any tangible way. Now, Facebook or LinkedIn or others will, you know, argue with that and say, no, we are compensating them because we're giving them access to a free platform that's allowing them to do all these things that they weren't able to do before. And that part is true, but because of the kind of obscure or opaque data policies that these companies had, when a consumer joined that service, you know, nobody looks through what the policy is, the data policy, the privacy policy, because these policies are 20, 30 pages long, very, very small type, and very, very, you know, written in a oblique fashion. So it's very difficult to understand for the average consumer. And so because of that, these companies have been able to make a great deal of money on the currency of personalized data, and yet the consumer isn't getting reciprocated in fair value of that, number one. And number two, they're truly not controlling how that data is used. And so what the GDPR is doing is it's shifting the balance of power and giving the power to the actual consumer and mandating that companies get very, very clearly delineated acceptance of their data policies, and that the data policies are actually easy to understand, and also allow consumers access to the data that they keep on them as well. And so there's a real shift in that balance of power between the consumer and the advertisers and the media owners and the media buyers. And that is a major change within the industry.
And what does it mean in the context of signage and particularly digital out of home? Is it an opportunity?
Well, actually, I believe this creates a huge opportunity for our industry, because what is happening now with the GDPR, and I think there is a fallacy out there that companies believe that it only affects companies that sit or are housed within the EU, but that's actually not true. Mm-hmm. The company could be an American company with all the data centers here in North America, and yet if they're providing services or selling products to EU customers, then they actually are restricted in the exact same way via the GDPR. And so what this has done is, you know, between this and the data breach that happened with Facebook and the elections in the United States, mm-hmm. actually have caused companies not only to, you know, be forced to comply with GDPR, but they're actually changing their policies as well about third-party data and personalized data on a general basis. And, you know, I think that a lot of this speaks to what the power of that data is. And what happened with the elections is actually a very, very clear kind of picture of how a company can exploit, or a country in this case, like Russia, can exploit personalized data that is available through their activities on social media and the activities of their friends, and actually do what's called social engineering, mm-hmm. and micro target very, very effectively to actually change sentiment, whether it be political sentiment, whether it be social sentiment, and impact things like elections. Now, this has been going on with the EU for longer than we understood it was happening to us here in the United States. And the GDPR is another way that they want to protect the European Union from outside influences, from maybe hostile concerns like Russia or something else. But the same way that Cambridge Analytica utilized this data and did very, very heavy lifting data analysis on it, mm-hmm. so that they can micro target and micro segment based on consumers who would most easily shift due to various data points. And what they did is they created dynamic messaging in the thousands of different types of creative messaging in order to, you know, pull the levers for each of those micro segments, mm-hmm. through the data, and we're actually able to affect the election. And so it's kind of the same thing that companies have been doing for years now, as far as micro targeting messaging, so marketing messaging and consumer purchase intent messaging, in order to shift consumer behavior as well. And while quite a bit of this came out in the press in the last 2 years, I don't think consumers really understood how that data was being used in order to change the way they interact, not only with others, but with brands as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the really interesting thing about the world today is that with smart city and smart home and things like the Amazon hubs and the Google hubs for your home, mm-hmm. EMC estimates that the amount of data in the world now doubles every 2 years. And that by 2020, globally, it will have created and stored more than 44 trillion gigabytes worth of data. And what's going on now is we're teaching programs and platforms via AI to actually automatically mine that type of data very, very quickly and be able to micro target based on behavior, based on sentiment, consumer sentiment, a lot of different variables and triggers that allow advertisers and governmental bodies and organizations to more effectively change perception and to drive things like purchase intent as well. And so that's what I was saying at the beginning, in that data is really the currency of the future. And so what it means to our industry is actually, I think, very, very powerful. And the reason for that is most of the players within the out-of-home industry have used levels of consumer data, but in most cases, they've used highly anonymized data. Mm-hmm. So it's data that's actually stripped of personal identification. So an example of that would be utilizing cell phone ping data to understand how many consumers are within the footprint of an out-of-home asset, so a billboard or a place-based media platform. And we've been able to use that to better gauge how many consumers are actually seeing an ad, but also by keeping it anonymized, the data that we actually utilize, what we can do is have aggregate demographic data that sits behind it that isn't attributable to the consumer itself. But what that allows us to understand is what type of consumers are within that footprint. Mm-hmm. So things like demographic. And so the fact that we have traditionally used anonymized data that did not have those personal identifiers, I think that that's a powerful play for us, because this incredibly powerful tool that the traditional digital players and online payers were able to use, which is that trackability and that personal identifiable information. And it's really those aspects that allowed Google and Facebook to become the powerhouses that they are. You know, they're not really social media companies or internet companies. They are, at their core, they are data companies, and the value mm-hmm. to them is in that data. So they've lost a very, very powerful tool to be able to do that type of targeting. And so I think between, you know, losing that capability, I think that advertisers and media buyers are going to look at other ways that they can target or come close to micro-targeting. And in the out-of-home world, in a lot of cases, you can do that even without having that data that I was talking about before, even on the anonymized side mm-hmm. of the data. And what I mean by that is the whole idea behind that micro-targeting that Google does with their ad platforms and Facebook does within their platform and for advertising, it's all about the contextual power of a message and utilizing that personal identifiable information in order to target contextually at a much higher level. Well, in out-of-home, the space you're in or the venue that you're in actually can inform a certain level of that same contextual information. So a great example is one of my networks, iCash TV, is a very large Hispanic digital out-of-home network that's in financial services, check cashing locations across the country. And we know without having any personal identifiable data, our media buyers and the brands know very succinctly what type of consumer that they're getting on this network. And it is a multicultural, highly Hispanic, Latino, and they're in the underbanked realm, which is a very, very desirable segment for advertisers. Mm-hmm. And so the location itself dictates some of this targeting. Same thing with things like Alpha Mom networks. So networks that are in clothing stores like Justice, which is the largest tween teen girl retailer in North America, a advertiser or a brand knows very well what the consumer base is that is in that location. And so they're able to make a determination of the target without utilizing this highly proprietary data that is going to be very limited now because of the consumer's ability to stop companies from not only collecting it, but then from using it or reselling that data. And so I think that's the major shift for our industry is I think we're mm-hmm. going to become the new targeting, and it's going to all be based on geolocation demographics.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company, ScreenFeed, comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
And why? A couple things. First, it's a European yes. edict. And I know you talked about the connective tissue to North America. But if you have Google and Facebook and others collecting data, just as they always do on North Americans in the way that they do it, how are they affected by that? Or are they just because they don't know they've got to truncate everything they do in terms of data collection?
Some of that is the case because it's very difficult to assure that, you know, like let's say someone is masking their IP address, which people have privacy tools there. It would be very difficult for a Google or a Facebook to identify if these people have location services off, all those things. How do they discern specifically who is an EU customer and who is not? And the ramifications of it are great because the maximum fine for noncompliance is $20 million or 20 million pounds, 24 million in US dollars, or 4% of annual global sales, whichever is greater. And so the fines are really exorbitant. And so they have to be very careful how they do it. That's number one. But number two, it's already affected what Facebook and Google are doing on a larger basis as well. I mean, after what happened with Cambridge Analytica, both of those parties shut off their third-party data usage, which greatly affected companies that were in the analytics and data space. So there are already companies that were fairly large companies that are shutting their doors specifically because they no longer have access to utilizing, you know, third-party data on those platforms. And so it's already caused a, you know, pall basically within the digital side of the industry. But remember, this comes very soon after that study that the ANA did that showed that digital and internet advertising, that a major amount of the advertising actually was fraud as far as the media buyer or the brands being charged for an impression that never actually occurred, either because it was below the fold online or people were using ad blocking software. And so this is just another instance showing that the value that companies thought that they were getting from traditional digital media needed to be seriously examined, because more than 50% of what they were paying for those media placements actually never involved a consumer impression.
There's a certain irony about all this, because for the longest time, the knock against out of home and to some degree digital out of home is that there was no measurement, there was no accountability. And now you're suggesting it's the flight to safe harbor and accurate, legitimate.
Oh, I definitely think so. And you know, most of the platforms that are out there now that are the larger scale digital out of home platforms, they utilize reporting that is extremely robust reporting. So if a digital out of home network, so like our network, utilizes a commercial grade equipment, then we actually have connectivity between the player, so the actual media player, and the screen. And because of the RS-232 controls, we know if the screen is actually on, because the player could be on, but if the screen's not on, it would count as a play, and you would think that it resulted in impressions. So having that connectivity provides automated reporting on that side. Now, you know, there are instances like what happened with Accent Health, where a media network took the reporting and then fudged the reporting afterwards. And that obviously is an issue that certainly was exposed because of what happened with Accent Health and the fact that it was the darling of the industry and was such a big player and so highly valued within the industry. But I think most of the networks out there, you know, would never engage in something like that, number one, and also do provide raw data behind it. So the actual raw data play reports. But I think that the things that we just talked about are opening up opportunities for the industry as a whole to work together to create an ecosystem that has more controls over it. So one example would be if the industry, the global industry for out of home, worked together through the various associations and built a software level that could reside within the cloud, and it isn't controlled by any for-profit company whatsoever. And it basically, the advertisers, the DSPs, the programmatic platforms could plug into that via a set of APIs and toolkits that the industry could agree upon and develop. And what that would allow is for these different sources within the ecosystem that are used for planning, that are used for buying, that are used for reporting, can all go through kind of that layer within the cloud. And it effectively utilize third-party reporting then at that point, because they would be direct feeds from the network systems themselves. So that's one way to do it. The other way is looking at blockchain. And, you know, blockchain started out in the realm of these cryptocurrencies and really utilizing it as a cryptocurrency platform. But at the end of the day, blockchain really is about data and data integrity, data security, and the fact that no one entity controls a single data source that could then be manipulated. And so, you know, I know that there are companies out there, very, very large scale global companies, that are looking at doing things within blockchain that would basically allow people's personalized data to truly become a currency, meaning a system where people would have their personalized data through these various data sources and data behavior platforms And if a company wanted access to it, they would actually, it would basically be arbitrage with the consumer. So they would have to pay the consumer for that specific data. And, you know, it could be fractions of a penny, but what it would allow a consumer to do is to truly monetize the value of their data that companies like Google and Facebook became the largest companies in the world from really the power of consumers' own personalized data.
So we've all been products for a while, but the idea here is maybe we'll finally get to monetize our products.
Correct. And it's funny. I mean, data already moves like money. You know, I mean, every second, you know, millions of different data bytes are transferred between people, between companies, between platforms, and the same way that money does. And that true value of the data that is evidenced by the growth of platforms like Google and Facebook, the average consumer has never been able to understand what the value of their data was. And I think that what the GDPR is doing is going to end up forcing companies to look at what is the real value of that data and then find a way to entice consumers to give them access to that data.
So that's all very helpful. Well, we've got a little bit of time left. Tell me about SmartBomb.
So SmartBomb Media Group was started around 10 years ago. I've been in the media, advertising, and technology industry for 34 years now. And I saw the disintermediation of advertising because of technology tools for consumers 15 years ago when things like on-demand and DVRs came into widespread use. And what I realized is that with that disintermediation, companies are going to find it more difficult to be able to reach consumers in a real impactful way. And the same thing happened on the digital side. I mean, on the digital side, you could have ad blockers, you could click off of an ad immediately in most cases. And so it truly created an environment of disintermediation. And what I realized is that the next place for that kind of touch that the consumer has little control over was going to be out of home. So that was one aspect of it. The other aspect of it was the ability with out of home to really, you know, target down to a very, very distinct consumer segment. And we chose multicultural with a, you know, Hispanic density and the underbanked consumer. And so we were able to understand the consumer extremely well, number one. And number two, come up with contextually relevant content that makes people, you know, enjoy watching our network when they're standing in line before they see a teller. And, you know, we partnered with NBC Telemundo on that aspect of it. And we have new content that's created for us every single week that is just created for our specific consumer base. And so that's really how SmartBomb Media started, was with iCash TV. But then about 6 or 7 years ago, I started getting calls from CEOs of other digital out-of-home networks and out-of-home networks, and started consulting with them on both what their ecosystem was, but then also how do they monetize those specific networks. And one of the things that I've preached for as long as I've been in this side of the industry, when I speak both here in the US as well as in Europe, what I've always preached is that the digital out-of-home networks and the out-of-home networks really need to realize that we're not competitors. And that is true. We are not competitors. And the reason we're not competitors is with media buyers and with brands, what they're looking for with an advertising platform is they want to be able to get reach. And it was very easy for them to get massive reach with digital platforms and mobile and online just because of the accessibility of the ecosystem itself. But within our industry, There is no single standard like there is with the web or with mobile. There are not industry-wide APIs or toolkits built in order to allow platforms to interact with each other. And more importantly, a lot of the media owners do view other media owners as competitors, and so they build walled gardens around them. But, you know, at the end of the day, no matter how many digital out-of-home or out-of-home assets we have, unless we all work together to provide access on a massive scale to that, we will never have the type of penetration, easy penetration, that those other platforms have. And so that's been a lot of what I focused on with the board of directors of the Digital Signage Federation. And it's one of the reasons why we formed last year the Global Digital Out-of-Home Council, which is made up of C-level executives at companies that are stakeholders within the out-of-home and digital out-of-home space. So things like brands, media companies, advertising agencies, networks, and software companies themselves.
All right. That was a very fast 30 minutes.
Well, there's, man. To tell you the truth, if we got into the weeds, it would take hours on this subject, just because there are so many moving parts involved in it. And because of the General Data Protection Regulation Act, you know, companies have to do discovery and find out what personal data they actually have and where it resides. Then they have to manage that, so govern how the personal data is actually used and accessed. They have to protect it, and protect it in real ways that will dramatically lower vulnerabilities and data breaches. And they have to have very, very robust reporting, because one of the things the GDPR does is give a consumer the ability to go to a company and request the data that they actually have on them, and to see it and to change it, or to have them delete it.
Interesting. Sheldon, thanks a bunch. That was very, very helpful.
My pleasure. Anytime.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net, every day. If you like this podcast, please also check out the companion 16.9 podcast called Projects. That's done by Michael Tutton, and there's a new episode every second Friday. 16.9, the blog, and now the podcast, are properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.